CliffCentral.com.
Yes, indeed. Friday morning, CliffCentral.com. Got Ben with us this morning. We also got George joining us a little bit later on. But in between, Stavel Mark will be our guest. We've had him on the show before. International model, actor, author, photographer. And he's someone who came to South Africa with a dream 21 years ago. He arrived here with one bag, one little carry-on bag. That was all he had. He had $50 in his pocket. And he actually put out a video just this week, last week perhaps, saying, you know, this is where he is now. He can't believe that his life has turned out this way. When he arrived here, he had no idea what he was in for. And it's been an adventure. Now, I have the world of respect for people who can make a decision like that and change their entire life, change the course of their life, change the place that they live in, and take a chance, take a risk, and make it work. It's amazing. Absolutely phenomenal. All right. So a lot of other things that people want to talk about, Ben. Did you hear on the show on Monday, Leanne brought up there's a new sport called mermaiding, where apparently, you know, I suppose you learn to swim like a mermaid or something like that. Anyway, I said it was stupid and I said it's not really a sport. And then I got, I don't know, four or five DMs on Instagram from people who said, we run a mermaiding school in the East Ront, and we want to teach you about mermaiding. And I've actually sent one or two of them on to the producers because I think it would be hilarious to find out. But I mean, this is apparently a thing. So where do you draw the line with sport? You just asked me, who would you not take money from? Where do you draw the line with sport? Is it still a sport if a fat person can do it?
So basically sport is something where people can be competitive. And in my mind, the second part of the definition is able to draw an audience. If no one cares, then it's not a sport. That's so, what I would say, just to compromise slightly. But ultimately sport is anything that where something competitive can take place with.
So in other words, I mean, would you consider like women's golf a sport? Because that doesn't draw an audience.
Well, Minji Lee just won the U.S. Open.
I'm sorry, who? What's her name?
Minji Lee. Minji Lee.
She's you are kidding me, right?
She's the younger sister of Minwoo Lee, who plays in the PGA Tour. She just won $1.8 million to win the U.S. Women's Open.
Minji Lee.
Sorry. Minji Lee, yeah.
Who is this person? Because the comments have been on fire with stories about her. Her name is Paige Spirinac.
Spirinac.
Who is she? She's fantastic.
I love her. She's beautiful and she's funny. So she was like a talented amateur golfer. She turned pro, but like didn't really work out. And she gets a lot of hate for being very busty and golfy-ish. Mm-hmm. She's beautiful. She's mesmerizing the hearts, and she loves golf.
Well, that's a rare combination.
I don't know what else I can really say about her.
Aren't a lot of, I mean, this is not the typical woman golfer. I knew someone. She's dead now. So I can talk about her because she's no longer alive. And she was quite butch. She was quite big. She loved her golf. She could hit that ball very hard. She often would swear and curse and trample the ground beneath her when things didn't go her way on the golf course. But she wasn't anything like this Paige Spirinac. Spirinac really breaks the rule book when it comes to golf, doesn't she?
Well, she's kind of like the biggest golfing influencer now. She's got huge audiences and she does a lot of things like that. No, Gareth, if you're looking for incredibly good-looking women, you'll probably find beach volleyball might beat golf.
Yeah, I think
that's
so.
That's me being diplomatic.
Right, okay.
No, but I, getting back to mermaiding, so what? Do you have to wear a fucking tail? How does it work?
I don't really care enough to find out, but people are telling me that they'll come to the studio and they'll talk to us about it. And I'm really not that enthusiastic. I'm curious, but only, you know, like a 5-minute conversation with someone at a party curious. I'm not like, let's sit down and talk about this for an hour curious. You know what I mean?
No.
All right.
Well, look, I mean, the reason why I'll entertain it, because it's like chicks with dicks swimming in America, and that's a sport, apparently.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you want to be a mermaid, so be it. I just want to know what sort of equipment.
Yeah. Ben, I think you've just frozen up. Here's an interesting point. Yonder says, The best golfers will still play with each other in tournaments. This LIV Live is just for 8 tournaments, and then golfers can still participate if those pricks don't disqualify them. So obviously, people still talking about that Saudi tournament. A lot of people asking here, Helene says, playing darts is not a sport, neither is chess. Well, I don't know about darts, because even though you can be fat to play darts, those people, you have to be damn good to get that bullseye every time, or to get that, you know, triple 20 or whatever it is you're going
triple
for.
20.
Yeah, it's hard.
Well, I mean, there's also clay pigeon shooting.
Sure.
You can go to the Olympics for that.
Yes, you can. And that's, how's that different to golf? You're really reliant on the gun, but you have to be a very good marksman to get that right.
Yeah.
I think that's
the thing
sport.
About people love definiteness, and they love being so like sure about things. Sport is a very broad thing. That's why I think it's so good. You should have sporting interest. Doesn't mean you have to now run. Doesn't mean you now have to dive into a pool. So having sporting interests are, yeah, it's various things you can do.
Do you think chess is a sport?
Sure.
So you're okay with that being at the Olympics?
Well, look, it's a lot more of a discipline and a certain skill set, but ultimately you're playing against somebody. You have the ability to be the best at it, so therefore it's a sport. It's competitive and draws an audience.
Steve wants to know...
Cockfighting is a sport.
Cockfighting, is it?
Yeah, because someone's going to be the best, and you've got the ability to draw an audience.
All right. Okay, cockfighting.
Arm wrestling is a sport.
Arm wrestling, it is. Arm wrestling is still a big sport, especially in bars in Benoni and Boxburg. It's a huge sport.
Sure.
And that's between the women.
Absolutely.
The men do much more dangerous things in the parking lot. That usually involve crowbars.
Now, Steve, this is a brilliant question. Why there's no men synchronized swimming? Because people just don't like looking at scrotums.
Yeah, that's
simple
a good
as
point.
That. Yes. Hairy legged scrotums. Although, yeah, to be fair, I think synchronized swimmers of the male or of variety will be a lot more like the male rhythmic dancers. I don't think you'll find the burly. It's like you're not going to get like some 6'3" Hungarian man with hairy legs. Because that would be a fucking sight, huh?
Imagine, and then they do those things where they open up the legs, you just see fucking sideburns down the thighs. Imagine.
Imagine like 15 azamats basically plopping into the pool and then bobbing around and getting rhythmic with their, like... Now, it actually should be a sport.
That's hilarious. Yeah, now that we think about it, it should be a sport. It would be hilarious. All right, Americans take that speed cup stacking quite seriously. It's like a frat house party game. It's not a sport. Well, I played beer pong a couple of weeks ago with a bunch of friends, and that was hilarious. But that's not an Olympic sport. That's just a drinking game.
Yeah, but I mean, it doesn't have to be an Olympic sport to be a sport.
Sure. You would consider beer pong a sport, but not an Olympic sport.
But then again, Gareth, what is an Olympic sport? Basically, the Olympics, like any other federation, is looking for relevance. That's why they had ballroom fucking dancing in Australia, because they like to ballroom dance.
Yeah, that's true.
That's why you've got skateboarding. Skateboarding's an Olympic sport because Asian kids are quite into it. So it was at Tokyo 2020.
Sure.
I think if you had to go into Borneo, maybe, you know,
eating people,
cannibalism
would be a sport,
Cannibalism could be an Olympic sport. Imagine the gold medal where you've got someone's intestines hanging out your mouth still. Each of them.
It's very interesting, the slap fighting, which Congo Chris mentions here. There's apparently a bar on the West Rand where people do this. They stand at a table. These two big guys will stand at a table, right? And the one guy will take a big, you know, massive kind of, he'll wind his arm right back and try to smack the other guy in the face really hard. And then that guy will get a chance to do it to him. I suppose the winner is the one who, like, knocks the other guy out. Would that be it? Ben, we can't hear you. You're on mute, I think.
There's an amazing video which I'm trying to find for you. There's this guy. He's a proper stereotypical tow truck driver kind of butt.
Yeah.
And he's a slap fighter. And he's basically issuing challenges to anybody in Gauteng. East Rand, West Rand, but bring it. And he's a slap fighter. It's one of the greatest things I've seen. But yeah, that's a big thing. Obviously, Russia starts a lot of the stupid combat sport because they have very low self-esteem. They're always drunk. And they generally don't get along with their dads. So a lot of the combat sport comes out of there. And slap fighting is no different.
Is that Russian in origin? I didn't know that. That's very interesting.
Or put it this way, it's going to come from a country that's A, cold, and B, drunk. So those two factors generally are Russia.
Yeah, I mean, Russia, it's not really a sport, but they will drink anything. So often Russians will... Is that one of your cats?
Yeah, I says, what the fuck do you want?
Is that cat talking to you? It almost sounds like it's making words.
She's going to get sick. Not on the rug. Oh, not on the rug.
Oh.
Oh, fuck. She's at this age now where she's just...
Oh, wow. Was she busy heaving? Is that what the noise was?
She's kind of heaving now.
Yeah, oh, great. All right, well, you watch
walk
that.
Walk it off, Miles.
Walk it off. You watch that while we carry on with the show. Let me welcome to the show.
Give me a second.
Yeah, yeah, you go.
I'll be back.
Yeah, yeah, you go and deal with that. How revolting. While Ben is messing around with his cat, who's obviously throwing up, let me welcome to the show someone who we've had on the show many times before. I'm delighted to welcome him back this morning. He's an absolute gem. International model, actor and photographer, Stivell Mark. Stivell, it's nice to see you, my friend. How are you? You're also on mute.
I'm sorry. There you go.
There we go.
Yeah, we're live. I was laughing so hard. I was laughing so hard about cockfighting. So I'm still stuck on that.
Dude. Listen, while we're waiting for Ben to come back and we can carry on that conversation in a second, I just have to tell you how I found this video of you with your bag that you brought here from Jamaica 21 years ago. I saw this video on YouTube. Someone tipped me off to it. I just found it very moving that you look back on 21 years of this amazing dream that you've decided to live, that you've made yourself an incredible life. You know, you've become a household name, certainly in parts of South Africa, you're very well known. There's a list of women who I've got that want me to introduce you to them. And I have to tell you, dude, it's just beautiful to hear you reflect for a moment on that very brave decision that you made as a very young man, you know, a teenager.
Yeah.
Came here with one bag, with $50 in your pocket, and look at what you've done.
Yeah.
It deserves some applause. So well done.
Thank you. Coming from you, G, that means a lot. Good morning to you. Good morning to you, to your viewers and listeners.
Thanks,
dude. It's good to be here.
Yeah,
it's good to be here. Yeah, man. 21 years ago, you know, I was still in high school.
Yes.
When an agent pulled up and, you know, he was just like, hey, man, I think you can really do this thing big time. So I was like, okay. You know, and again, it was just stepping out and believing in that. And then, you know, on the beginnings, you're just like, hey, here's your shot. Take it. This is it. Either you don't or...
No,
you
it's just
kind of stick around and work for the tourists coming through. It's just like it.
It's a great story, and I also didn't realize like you've been in South Africa that long now. You've been in South Africa longer than you were in Jamaica.
Yeah, man, for sure. Wow, you know what? I didn't think of it like that. You know, yes,
it's a big deal.
Yes, actually, 1,000% correct.
It's sort of like, and I mean, I can only relate to this because of the Jamaica part of it. My grandmother got married to my grandfather. She was probably 22, 23 when she married him. And she was from Clarendon in southern Jamaica.
Wow. Yeah. Wow, man. Yeah.
And she came out here.
So you have the Jamaican blood in you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Jamaican blood inside
you. So she came out here to South Africa. She married into this Afrikaans family. She had no idea. She couldn't speak a word of Afrikaans. She didn't know one thing about South Africa. And she came here and made a life for herself. Ended up having four children. Man. Ended up living on this farm. And she saw, I think she saw her family maybe three times again in her life. But she totally changed her life. There was no connection to Jamaica eventually at all, except that she always supported the West Indies and cricket, and she loved Caribbean music and calypso music.
Right.
And she also had accent. She kept her accent. You've kept your accent.
Well, I mean, you know, it depends on who I'm talking to. You know, it depends on who I'm talking to.
You turn it on when you are busy talking to someone from the Caribbean, you turn it up.
Yeah, man, 100%. So, for example, you're walking at the show, you say, good morning, Garrett, wagwan, big up your peoples. You don't know where they are, you know. Yeah, live, man, direct.
I love it, dude. That's so cool.
Yeah, man.
All right, do you think chess and beer pong and darts are an actual sport?
Chess for sure.
Chess
for sure. I mean, I don't play chess for nothing. I got a chess board here I got as a gift. It's literally sitting in the living room. I've never, ever... even like attempted, because I look at this thing and I'm just like, I don't even know where to begin. But I mean, beer pong's for fun. If we're gonna do this as a sport to say, okay, where do we end up at the end of the night? Sure. But chess, probably just chess.
I got to ask you both this. I had people here for dinner on Saturday night last week, and we were going to play some games, like board games and things, and everybody was like dead against it, because it seems like such an investment. If you, you know, if you start a game like Risk or Monopoly or whatever, you're going to be there for a long time. So I put it all away and immediately like changed tack, and we just all sat around talking shit and, you know, like, having a pretty good conversation, but we didn't end up playing games. I mean, besides like the drunken games like beer pong, are there any dead cert entertainment things that you can do when you've got a bunch of people around that are always a winner?
Cards Against Humanity every single time. It's short, it's sharp, it's witty, it's...
Gareth, where did you find him? I want to know where you found him. I love him to bits. Like, I absolutely love this man.
It's the only thing to win, Gareth, because you're not invested with time.
Yeah, that's
true. And you also get to see people's true colors, too.
Yeah,
true. And especially, I agree with that.
Especially in a world where everybody's offended by everything, Cards Against Humanity is still the very best game you could play.
I think it's a great game.
Yeah. All right, so Stavel, I want to talk about your... You wrote a book years ago, what, 2015 or whatever?
Yeah. 7 years ago since I last saw you, man. I mean, you haven't changed. Still looking as hot as ever. You know?
Well, you said your book was called The Refined Player, Sex, Lies, and Dates.
And
that was the
dates,
last time...
Yeah.
I think that was the last time we had you on the show. Now, I mean...
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, it's easy for you to talk about... you know, the refined player and how you could be better at dates and how you could be better at sex and how you can attract women more easily and all that kind of thing. But I mean, you were born good looking. It's not so easy for the rest of it. No, I mean, you were, because you went into modeling, and I mean...
Don't guilty laugh. He's right. Yeah, I mean,
It's not a guilt laugh. It's me laughing because I'm going... He said he's got a list of women who would want my details, and it's the same thing vice versa. People are always going, please. I know, even, literally right now, I have people on Facebook going, hey, man, get Gareth's number for me.
Bullshit.
So it's one of those things.
You're being nice. I've heard this shit before. Listen, I know what I'm dealing with. I look in the mirror every day. You don't have to look at this face. You look at your face. Now, the point that I wanted to get to was, what is there still power in modeling for guys? Because I've always thought that if you're a girl and you're a model, you can earn a lot of money. You get to travel the world. You get to meet interesting people. Of course, you have to deal with pervy photographers, which is a major, major problem for these. Now, really, these girls who are in modeling, they always have to deal with a pervy photographer. They're always these creepy, weird guys who do... Not all photographers, it has to be said. Some of them are really good, but there are a lot of them that are just creeps. Is it the same with guys?
It's definitely vice versa. I mean, we have, as men, we have creepy photographers that come at us too. It is both ways. And yes, there is still power. There is also lots of opportunities to make big money. Yeah. It's just a matter of which market you're in, you know. Knowing your worth is also very important. I do think the market is probably watered down a little bit in South Africa because, you know, everyone wants to be a model. And if we can't get Stivell, or Stivell doesn't want to do it, then we'll find somebody who just wants to get the promo. You know, so they'll do it. So that has definitely watered down the market a little bit.
And what about Instagram? You know? Has that made everybody, because everyone thinks they're an Instagram model. It's like everybody thinks,
absolutely.
You know, everybody
absolutely.
Thinks that they're a tactical World War II parabat because they've played some first person shooter game for like 15 minutes. Is that the same thing? Do you get annoyed with people who say to you on Instagram, yo, well, I'm also a model, and they've done no work at all. They've had like one shitty photographer come around to their house and take like pictures of them in their bathroom, and then they're trying to compete with you.
No, look, for me, I think if there's an opportunity for you to make some money, go ahead and make it, as long as you're being safe about it. But, for me, the term model, you know, it means something else. It means something else because I'm from an era where it was the work that you were doing, the places you've traveled that made you an international model, not just travel, but work in those markets. But you are right. Everyone, there's so many Instagram models right now. Especially being a photographer, having added photographer to my things.
Yes.
You see it all the time. You know, you stand in front of the camera and it's a completely different thing. It's not what you're seeing there. It's just little things, you know. It could be the mouth that's just up to one side, or you got this funny thing you do with the eye. It's a whole process. It's not just I'm a model. You know, there's a lot more to
it. Well, you and Ben have this in common. You've had to spend a lot of money. I don't know if Ben's still doing this, but like on photography equipment, because if you're going to film or you're going to take pictures of things.
I'm so glad you said photography equipment there. I was thinking, where the hell is this going?
No, like you've got to spend a lot of money on this stuff. And for example, in the same video I was talking about that Stavel put up the other day, you mentioned your photography bag, and you've got all this like photographic equipment, and lenses, and you know, expensive battery packs, and like a spare this and a spare that, and the camera itself, and God knows how much all this shit costs. I mean, really, a lot of people, apparently it's the most popular hobby in the world, photography.
Yeah.
But just because you're a photography fan, and maybe because you own a camera, doesn't mean you're a professional photographer. Same with modeling. No.
Definitely. And that's why for me, you know, I've always taken whichever craft I've decided I'm going to jump on, I've always gone ahead and just kind of figured out as much as I can about it. So even for photography, I went to photography school. You know, I made sure I knew the ins and outs. I went into the old Red Lab and, you know, wait for things to go down. I want to put some film. I want to see all that stuff.
You developed photos the old way?
Oh, yeah, man. I went through the old process. You got to go through the whole thing, you know. Jesus, well, again, that depends on how much, you know, you want to learn and where you want to go with it. I was very, very intrigued. I wanted to know what, for example, a crop sensor did to a full body camera. What are the differences? What does this lens mean? Why do you use it? Why not just use the one lens the whole time? You know, why we got to have several lens, you know? So I wanted to know more. And so, yeah, it can become a very, very expensive hobby. I can tell you now, for example, because I'm a Canon fan. So the R5, for example, when that dropped, I think it was like 95,000 rands. There you go.
Oh,
that's just the body. That does not include
Holy
lens.
Holy shit.
See? Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's mirrorless, so that's where you're going. Before that, their flagship is a 5D Mark IV. That right now, body alone, you're probably looking at about 45. So there you go. And lenses are often more expensive than the actual camera itself.
Is it getting cheaper? Is it getting cheaper or is it getting more expensive?
More expensive for sure. More expensive for sure.
What these
glasses do right now is crazy.
What's that, Ben?
Sorry, Ben, go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's definitely getting more expensive on the top end. I think it's getting more affordable to get into it. But then once you're in it, and this is why it's probably smart on their behalf, they make these intro models quite attractive because they know that you're going to get bitten by this and you're going to start upgrading all the time. But I think that's where photography and like what I do, like I make videos, it's a lot easier because I know I'm not going to make anything documentary level. I got a production company that does that, so my ceiling is kind of here, and then I work on editing and working different ways there. Photography, it becomes like a dark art because, as you say, there is no end to what you can learn, and then you also get caught up with the fact that you want to match skill with equipment.
A lot of the time
it's so difficult to just say, cool, I'm gonna stop here, because then you get better and your skill demands better equipment, and that's how it just carries on.
I got to ask you.
I think for me as well there, Ben, because if you carry on, you know, you said you do your own editing and stuff.
Yeah.
And that's where it even becomes more fun now, because, and that's the thing, G, when you're shooting now and you edit your own stuff, you already know what you're going to get once you get into the editing scene.
Right.
So you have an idea and you just, like you said, you just literally just go mad. You're like, no, I want to try it from down here. And the photography poses where you always see the photographer on the ground doing weird things. It's a real thing. it's a real thing.
That's what happens, huh? You have to do that shit. You have to get down on your hands and knees sometimes.
For sure.
I just want to throw this in here because a lot of people may not be aware of it, but you did this series on the History Channel, which I saw you in not so long ago, where you played Booker T. Washington in the series Theodore Roosevelt. I was watching this because I'm a history nerd, so I don't know if anyone else in South Africa even saw Theodore Roosevelt, but obviously I would have watched it. And then I saw this dude playing Booker T. Washington, the famous, you know, historical figure, and I'm like, hang on a second, I know that guy. I realized it was you.
Yeah, man. You know, the funny thing is, man, I've always preferred letting the work kind of speak for itself over the years. So I've never been the guy to, like, you know, come out and always market stuff. I mean, the only reason why you're hearing about stuff is like my American team is now going, no, you got to get a PR. You need a PR. Right. You need a whole team behind you, you know? And so I had to go out now and hire a PR. And this is why we're doing all these press runs. I'm like, oh, gosh, I really got to do this stuff now. So, yeah, Booker T. Washington, man, it's like, again, it's like doing history in South Africa and you're being told, hey, you're going to play Nelson Mandela.
Right.
It's like, whoa, what do you mean? It's, you know, it was wild
role.
For me.
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing. It was wild for me. It was really wild for me. but also just kind of seeing, you know, what he was to his people and what that meant for him, and just believing in an ideal and going for that, not just going, yeah, you know, give it to me because I'm worthy of it. You know, for him, it was always about, are you educated enough to be in that position? It was never about just give it to me. It was like, are you ready for that?
Yeah.
So I like that principle.
You know, in some ways, this is also relevant to kind of your career, but it's also relevant to what's going on in politics at the moment. There's so many people sitting around and going, I expect, I deserve, I'm entitled to whatever.
For
someone,
sure.
Someone who you know, like Booker T. Washington, for example, who got to where he got all on his merits. It had nothing to do with, like, no one was looking to create a role for black men at that stage. No one was looking to
1,000%
to carve out a space for black men. It's just like in sport, Ben. You know, no one's looking to have proportional representation of, you know, really fat people on athletics teams, because we want the best. We want to see the best, and this is what I think history has taught us time and time again. If you're really good at something, you'll do well. Full stop. The moment the politicians get involved in it, or, you know, you have boards of people who are deciding who gets in and who gets out, that's where the problems arise.
Well, I think there's something beautiful in being the best in everything, because it takes whatever that is forward. Yeah. So if you're looking for athletics, for instance, you want to find the fastest, okay? So what is the fastest? Genetically, it's generally quite the same. But that faster becomes different over different generations. So yeah, you should always leave it be, so to speak.
Do you get excited when you meet these big celebrities, Stivell? I mean, you've worked with like Jodie Foster, and you've worked with Benedict Cumberbatch, and some of these people who are really big stars. I mean, do you get starstruck, or do you just, you know, kind of treat it like a job?
Nah, for me, I treat it like a job, you know, because the moment you kind of get starstruck, or you act kind of weird, you know, people kind of get taken back. I'll give you a funny story, for example. I mean, bless his soul right now, William Hurt. I was shooting a film with him called The Challenger Disaster, and I was just so nervous next to this dude, you know, and I was told, don't speak to him unless he speaks to you. Don't just stay in your lane.
Right.
So I'm sitting there on the side of the ledge downtown, which is supposed to be NASA headquarters back in the States. And I'm sitting there, and I just kind of hear this voice from the corner going, hey. And I'm not even looking to the side, because I'm like, he's not talking to me. I was told, don't speak to this dude. So, you know, in true William Hurt style, it's kind of just have his head top down. And he just, hey, man, I'm talking to you. So I looked over. I was like, oh, hi. And he's like, where are you from? So I was like, the U.S. We're in the U.S. New York. We're in New York. The Bronx. We're in the Bronx. I was like, wait, what? So he's like, yeah, I don't believe you. So I was like, okay, that's okay too, man. Yeah, I was like, that's okay too, man.
Jeez.
So then he goes on and goes, hey, I mean, no, I get it. You know, you want a piano player, I play the piano. I mean, you got to do what you got to do for the role, right? So I was like, okay, cool, man.
And this is William Hurt?
William Hurt, like Oscar winning William Hurt. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, what is going on right now? And the point of the story is that the director saw what was going on, and he came over and he was like, hey, man, just don't worry about it. I booked you. You're here for this. Just do what you
got.
But I was so shaken up.
Was he trying to psych you out? Was he trying to mess with you so that you?
I think that's what it was. I think that's what it was, because then we got into these cars, which were so expensive, you know, 19 whatever cars. These, you know, there's the owner out there just buffing it between scenes.
Right.
And I get into the thing, and I'm so nervous, and I fucking hit it. I just smashed the car.
Oh shit!
So because I was so shaken up, and then. The following day, he's the sweetest fucking guy on the set. And I'm like, what is going on? And then I realized it. On the days when he's supposed to be a douchebag to my character, he was a douchebag. On the days when he was supposed to be super sweet to my character, he was the sweetest guy in the world. And I'm like, I can't do this shit with you. No, we're not doing this. So henceforth, I just literally stood in my trailer the whole time. I was like, when we're going on set, we're going on set. I don't want to do this. But yeah, I don't get starstruck on sets, man. I just go in there and I do the work. You have actors who just want you to know that this is my scene.
Oh, right.
This is my scene.
So it becomes like
it becomes like
a domination thing. They have to be in charge.
Yeah, for sure.
That reminds me of that. Did you ever watch Frost Nixon? Ben, did you ever watch Frost Nixon?
No.
It's this brilliant movie. I can't remember the guy who plays Frost. It's the same guy who played Tony Blair in this in that movie with the Queen. Anyway, he's like David Frost, the famous interviewer, and then they've got this guy who's playing Richard Nixon. And Nixon was supposedly, this is a true story, right? Nixon was just like the ultimate, like, horrible shithead when it came to interviews. And I mean, we were talking about journalists earlier and how you should handle them. And Richard Nixon would come in with 5 minutes to go until recording, right? So this was, I think it was live. So the tension's even higher when something's live. You know, cameras are going to switch on. You're going to go live on TV. David Frost, supposedly the greatest interviewer of his generation. Richard Nixon, this is straight after Watergate. He's going to nail Richard Nixon, find out what really happened. So there was a lot of tension in the room. And all these people, obviously, because you guys know, I mean, you've both been on film sets and you've both been on, like, you know, in radio, live radio studio situations. And Nixon walks in and he sits down. And usually there's like 2-3 minutes where you kind of you make small talk and you're like, hi, Mr. President, very nice to meet you. And you kind of shake his hand and sit down and then you get ready. So you say, I hope you're having a good day. And, you know, you try to put him in his ease so that you can have a good interview with him. But Nixon was such a shit. He sat down opposite this guy and he looks at him and he goes, Mr. Frost. David Frost goes, yes, sir, Mr. President. He goes, those are very effeminate shoes you're wearing. Are they Italian? You look like the sort of man who would wear Italian effeminate shoes. And it totally threw, it threw David Frost so badly that in that first interview, because I think it was a series of three, you can actually, if you watch the interview, he starts off, he's nervous as hell, hands are shaking, because now all Richard Nixon has done is he's kind of, you know, he's dominated him. He's like climbed on top of the situation and made him his bitch so that... So that obviously Frost doesn't ask any tough questions. And what you just said about, you know, Hurt, it must have been the same thing.
No, it truly was, man. That's literally how it felt. It was, I mean, and I was much younger too. And again, you know, it was kind of one of the first big actors you're working with. Because mind you, we had Sally Fields on that set. We had Bruce Greenwood. All these people were just super, super amazing, nice people. I just couldn't understand why this. I was like, it's just little old me, William. You know, little on me. But I stood there and I was like, well, you know what? I'm going to ride this thing until the wheels fall off. You're the Oscar winning actor and I'm on screen with you, buddy. So ain't nothing you can do right now. Let's just do it.
Yeah. Gareth, it kind of comes back to like, what is a sport? It's like Nixon wanted to win. This William guy wanted to win. So right.
For sure.
You know, it's like you can turn any situation into kind of a sport. Same with business negotiations. It could be relationship, like high grounding. The same thing.
Yeah. And you see people doing this in relationships. You watch like a couple where either the woman or the man is kind of in charge of the conversation. I mean, I've got a friend who married this woman and I don't really know her very well. I knew him reasonably well. He wasn't like a close friend, but we kind of knew each other and we'd see each other from time to time. And she has completely dominated him. And for example, when you're in a social situation with them, what happens is you'll be talking to him and she will answer. She'll burst. Shit. No, seriously, it's the weirdest thing to see because she's completely unaware of it and he's completely unaware of it. It's just the normal flow of communication with them. So I'll say to him like, hey man, how's work going? And she'll come in and she'll go, it's going fine. He's doing really well. I'll be like, okay, well, I don't think I was talking to you, but all right. And it's so bizarre to see because he's completely emasculated in that moment and he's not in charge. Like, she is totally in charge. Not that the, I mean, for some people that might work. It's not my business to figure out whether or not their relationship is healthy. But certainly when you talk to this guy, expect the answer to come from her, not from him.
Wow.
Sorry, Stavel, on that whole acting thing, you know, Gareth and I often talk about actors have it quite difficult because they're not actually really part of this world. They're playing make-believe. It's all play. But it's like, it must be quite a difficult thing mentally to be consistent about stuff. So it's one thing to say, cool, I'm this character, I'm getting into this particular role. But is like consistency something that you have to physically work on, or is it just easier with some roles to really nail it and that's why you choose certain things as a result?
No.
I think it's a bit of both. I think it's a bit of both. So let's speak about the Mauritanian, for example, which is the one Gareth's talking about now with Benedict Cumberbatch and Jodie Foster. I mean, you know, I went to the barbershop, man, because in my head, I saw this guy. I was like, he's a CIA agent. I want him to be fresh and clean. So, you know, I went to the barbershop. I had my lines tethered, man. I went, my waves were so clean on my hair. I was the cleanest dude you ever saw, like fresh out of a magazine, GQ. And I got into the makeup trailer. the hair and makeup trailer, and they look at me and they're like, wow, beautiful hair, man. That's really, really nice. And she literally took the clipper and she literally shaved out the front of my head right here.
Whoa.
Like, it shook me up. I literally said to her, can I just get a moment? I just need to use the toilet real quick. But the funny thing is that it shook you up because you had the character in your head one way, right? Mm-hmm. And so I went into my trailer, and while I was there, I was like, okay, you're not married to your hair. You're not married to what the physical is doing right now. The character is what's important. So I got back to the hair and makeup trailer. I said, okay, cool. If we're going to go this far, I'm going to do everything that I am not, for example. So I want you to make this guy. So if you watch the film, you'll see I use my left arm a lot. I'm not a left arm, I'm a right armer, right? You'll see that I have glasses on. I don't wear glasses, okay? You'll see I smoke, and I have moments, like deep, puffy moments. I don't smoke in real life.
That's amazing. You did all of that. I mean, by the way, this movie was only, what, 2021?
Oh, yeah. It's on Amazon Prime right now, too. Right. Jodie Foster won the best actor for that, and 5 BAFTA nominations. Yeah, incredible film. Based off a true story.
Do the things like the cigarette and the glasses and the fact that you're using your left rather than your right, does that consciously keep you in character?
1,000%. Because in that moment, you are no longer yourself. You've literally tapped out of yourself. You've tapped out. You've completely tapped out.
It's wild.
You know, the cameras are rolling. You don't even when a director says cut sometimes, you're still in it. So you're still having moments. There are times where you say things that's not even in the script because, again, it's an out-of-body experience. You're really dedicated to that moment, you know? It's what they call a button at the end of it. It's kind of like, you know, is he good? It may be a look. It may be just a smirk. It might be just a look over the glasses. It's everything there. It's just moments. It's moments.
Wow, that must be so difficult because sometimes roles will grab you more than others. But do you ever get to those times where, like, you've been doing this, other actors have been doing this, but then some people just don't let go and they kind of Daniel Day-Lewis it for longer periods?
Oh, no, for sure, man. Yeah, for sure. There are guys who, for example, again, I've been on set where they don't speak to you because they don't want to develop that kind of nice guy relationship because they're the antagonist towards your character. So they actually stay separate from you. They don't really talk much to you. And at the end of it all, you know, they'll come in and they'll give you a smile or, you know, they'll do the old, hey, man, this is me. Hi, pleasure to meet you kind of thing. So it all depends. You know, then you also have the guys who come on set and they're going, you know, well, I'm the big actor on this. I'm number one or I'm number two or number three on this job. So I don't really need to speak to you. But for me, I walk in there like a true Jamaican.
Have you ever?
I'm like, yo, what's up? How you doing? You know,
have you ever met one of these actors who is a complete douchebag in person as well? I mean, you may never work with them again.
No.
You could say no. Are you sure?
No, I promise you. Or at least they haven't shown that to me.
Okay,
at least they haven't shown that to me.
I've heard,
at least I haven't seen that yet.
I've heard, like, yeah, for example, Alec Baldwin's a real turd. He's just a horrible guy to work with because he's up his own backside.
Yeah.
You know, shooting directors dead and that kind of shit. So I don't know where
I'm... Way too soon.
is it ready? Okay, listen. Friday's probably the only day we get to have, like, guy conversations where it's just a whole lot of guys here. Have you seen Top Gun yet, the new Top Gun? People are raving about it.
I have, man. And
you
I saw
have?
It in IMAX, too.
Oh, wow. Worth it? Because I haven't seen it yet. I haven't been.
It's incredible. No, it's absolutely
really
incredible. And you know, I normally watch films 2 or 3 times. That's like my thing. It's my thing. This is probably another thing for you to know. Or I don't know if every actor does this, but I do it. I watch the film as an actor. So I'm wondering why they made that choice. Would I have taken it from there? Where's the camera angle at that point? So I literally watched that film just
that can't
just
be fun. If you're looking at it that way, it must be horrible to watch.
But hence I'm saying I gotta see it 2 or 3 times.
Okay.
So I go through that. So the first one for me is like my own personal class. It's like I'm going into class. Okay, wow.
So you're basically
wow,
you're the only guy. That. You're the only guy keeping Sturt Kinnicore in business at the moment. If that's the case. No, really.
I mean, that's probably why they have me on a VIP black right now because they're like he's always here. He's always here.
But the second time around,
I can have a bit more fun. The second time around, watching that, and I can have a bit more fun. But listen, man, just from because we know how Tommy's about his own stunts and all that, but also. I mean, I read something the other day where they literally had these guys in flight simulators and then from them taking them into these actual planes.
Yeah.
So that by the time they were rolling, they weren't freaked out by all the G-force that was coming at them.
Wow.
It's incredible.
Wow.
But it's interesting what you say about watching it a few times, because like you see things in layers, because you understand that the dialogue has to be at a certain pitch and a certain way of landing it.
For sure.
Then you also see how suspense and tension is built up by camera angles and sound, all these kind of things. I also got to that point. And there's some movies you can just watch forever and ever, because there's just it's the beauty and the craft which really makes these things pop. For a lot of people, for a lot of people like Gareth, who just sit there with his popcorn shoving in his face, he'll see something and he'll be like, "Oh, that was cool," and he won't understand why it's cool at the time.
That was cool.
No, I pay attention to everything, man. One of my favorite things to do with films and series or anything that's on TV is to catch people where I always say to them, "What time was it?" And they go, "Huh?" Like, people always ignore clocks. I always look at the clock. What time is the clock saying?
Are you kidding, man? Because
everything means something.
What a horrible way to watch a movie. It must be.
You gotta pay attention to everything.
It's the absolute best, Gareth. It makes you like, you get three times the more of the pleasure. Yeah. You must try to find a guy on YouTube called Nerdwriter. And what he does is he breaks down a lot of these sort of amazing scenes in movies. And he breaks down exactly what we're talking about. Like why the music was the way it was. Why the color of the outfit was that way.
Yeah,
for
sure. The time. Like why there was a certain sort of scene and mist that came through to support the sort of dialogue and It's actually really beautiful when you break into it.
Oh, well, all right. Yeah. I'll take your word for it. I don't know. I just I enjoy it.
I mean, there's that one scene.
I'm the lowest common denominator viewer. Like Ben says, I'll just sit there and go, "Ooh, that was cool." I don't really care about analyzing
but
it.
But you want to have the stuff, man. But it's fun to watch films with that technical know-how. Like, for example, still talking about Top Gun. This is in the previews. There's that one scene where the general is standing there and this massive crash just goes over him and it's all this wind is like an explosion just went off.
Mm-hmm.
And right away I was like, okay, that tells me he's gonna be one of those top generals. He doesn't fuck around. Mm-hmm. And that's literally the next scene, boom, face straight into camera. Not a smile on face. I'm like, yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, listen. Before we wrap it up, because we've got George joining us in a moment or two, we'll talk a little bit about cars and about motoring and about all the other stuff that he's got on the agenda. What are you busy with at the moment, Stavel? Give us an update. What's been happening?
I'm working on something right now. I'm itching. I cannot wait. Like, you ever had that one thing in your career where you're like, you cannot wait for people to just know about this?
No.
That is what I'm working on right now. It's a global show. Put it this way.
Yeah.
I'm trying to put this in the right way so I don't give it away. It's a part of a comic. I'll put it this way. Part of a comic.
Oh.
Comic.
Oh. Could we talk Marvel or DC here? Is this what we're maybe talking about?
We are not going to talk about this, Gareth. All we're going to say is that
this
comic book, they went on to sell 320 million copies.
I think you're right? I think you're the next Black Panther. I think you're
talking over you because I want to be distracted.
this sounds very good, dude. Excellent. I'm very excited.
I'm super excited. I'm super excited. Good. Apart from that, I've got two more films coming out. Either later this year or beginning of next year. One is a local joint called The Honeymoon, which we've got Mini Lamini in. We've got Tumi Maroke. And so it's good fun. It's a chick flick.
Cool.
And then we have another one coming out that's again a Netflix original. That's called Office Invasion. So that should be good fun. I get to use a Jamaican accent.
Oh, good.
Flesh-eating alien with, you know, fire coming out of me. So it should be good fun.
Sounds amazing. All right. Well, Sanele says, I'm watching the Top Gun movie immediately after this because you've got him excited. Oh,
wonderful. There you go.
All right. Very, very good. All right. So, Stavel, very nice to see you, dude. And I hope we will see you on the big screen soon again doing all of these things
you
mentioned and the ones that you're not allowed to mention yet.
Right, for sure.
And no, who knows?
Thank you.
I mean, this guy
is... Maybe I'll test out the photography side of things. I'm sure you'd do some new PR shots. You know, get you in the studio. Let's take some pictures, man.
If anyone... you want to take pictures of Quasimodo coming out of his bell tower? Yeah, you go for it. Here's an artistic take on Quasimodo walking out of Notre Dame Cathedral's crypt. Yeah, great. All right, thanks, Stivell. Nice to see you, dude.
Thanks a lot, guys. Have a great weekend.
Cheers, my bro. Bye-bye.
All the best.
There he is, Stivell Mark. What a guy. You can follow him on social media at Stivell Mark, Stevell Marc. And lots of cool stories coming from him. It's good to check in with George Meany. That means it's Friday. It means the weekend has begun. Good morning, Borge. How are you?
Good morning, Gareth. How's it been?
Hey, George.
I'm good. Yeah.
What are you up to? What are you driving, flying, or piloting this weekend?
Tomorrow there's a big bushcat gathering.
What?
A bushcat, which is a type of aeroplane, the one that I fly.
Okay.
Right. It's a South African built 2-seater. Mm-hmm. They're all flying to Middelburg Airfield, and everybody that owns a bushcat is flying in there. So,
wow.
I organize these things from time to time. Yeah.
Okay. That sounds very cool.
So, yeah, go fly there, land, have a bit of breakfast. It's almost like a motorcycle breakfast run type vibe.
Very nice, George.
Very, very nice.
I just want to put a picture up on the screen of this bushcat so people can see what we're talking about, because we did have your plane on the show not so long ago. You were in the hangar and you had it actually sitting behind you while you were talking to us, but I thought maybe people who didn't see that might want to know what it looks like. This one is painted in zebra stripes, black and white. There it is. So that's the little plane you're talking about.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Although mine's not a tail dragger, it's got a nose wheel, so it's a slight difference, but same aeroplane.
Very nice.
That one's quite popular, actually. That one, there's one like it in South Africa as well. It's often used for anti-poaching, because they're very nimble and almost like a zippy little car in the sky.
It's very cool. Very cool.
George, do you all have special like bushcat leather jackets that you then sort of compare?
No, I'll wear a trader one.
I'm just because it sounds like those Harley clubs that you see these guys going on a breakfast run. Except you guys are like,
yeah, exactly.
You're one tier up from them because you're actually flying to your various places. That's cool.
And then you could have like your special bushcat like code name on the back of your leather jacket.
Correct.
George, I reckon you should sell bushcat merch. Get like a side gig going there.
Yeah, I just sell bushcat merch, but motorcycle clubs do that. I used to be a cyclist, and cyclists were very similar as well. It was all about the kit.
There's no need to embarrass yourself by bringing up cycling, George. Yeah, there's a lot of horrible things in the world. Let's just try to keep Fridays positive, please, if you don't mind.
Well, that leads me into the first story, Gareth. I sent you a link to a short video there. So this man, this car dealership. In America, in Belgium, this car dealership in Belgium couldn't understand why they had saliva on the cars that are parked on the sidewalk every day. They find the saliva running down the side of the car, and they couldn't figure it out. So they went and they reviewed the CCTV footage, and that's the video I sent you.
Right.
And it turns out this disgruntled cyclist every day rode past the cars and spat on them.
Good Lord. What's his problem? Because when you said saliva, I thought it maybe was in Kwazazana Dlamini Zuma and when people put saliva on their paper. You remember that? That was like 2 years ago, but it was a huge, huge hit. So I thought maybe it was her. But what was the reason the cyclist is spitting on cars?
They don't know, but the owner of the dealership ran out. Dealership's name is Auto James. Ran out with a bucket of freezing water in winter, and toppled the bucket over the cyclist. They timed it. They knew every day this guy's going to come past.
I love it. Good. That's the way to treat cyclists.
Exactly, and so that's what the dealership.
That's
owner
hilarious.
Did.
Look at that. There it is. And the cyclist is wearing like an anorak. And I don't know if you could even call them a cyclist. If you dress like that, you're really just a bicycler. Bicycler. All right, very good. That's the way to deal with cyclists. We like that.
The ones that spit on your cars, I suppose. But no. There's another more interesting story, I suppose, and that is a man in Colorado has been collecting. I don't know if you ever collected Hot Wheels, Gary.
Yes. Funny thing, yesterday I actually drove past a shop where they sell like hobby stuff, and they had in the display window, they had a whole range of Hot Wheels. It's a big thing.
It's a very big thing, and this guy has collected over 30,000 Hot Wheels, some very, very rare Hot Wheels.
Phenomenal
display that he has.
We got to get this guy on Collectomania. On Mondays we do this thing called Collectomania where we talk to people about their collections, and I'm sure in South Africa there's someone who's collected all the Hot Wheels. If you know who that person is, or if you are that person, then send us an email, contact@cliffcentral.com. We want to talk to you.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, this guy's name is Kevin Feely from Firestone, Colorado.
Isn't he Britney Spears' ex? Isn't that his name?
Don't know.
Oh, Kevin Free. I don't know. Something Kevin.
Kevin Federline's the guy.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Yeah, sorry. Quite right.
Yeah, I'll send you the link if you want to get in touch with him.
Right. Cool.
But 30,000 Hot Wheels this guy's collected, and then this guy from, nobody really knows, but everybody thinks it's Florida, decided that in a flood situation, mm-hmm. to drive his Corvette, he's got a C8 Corvette, and wade through the water. Now, if you have a look at the image of him wading through the water, let me just get it up here. If you look at the image of him wading through the water, mm-hmm. you will see that he... there it is.
All right, let me put that up on the screen. Go ahead.
You will see that he's almost under the water, and wow. And this car, the car kept going, but nobody knows who this guy is, and this image appeared. I mean, the car can't run for too long that deep in the water. It's just impossible.
You see a lot of these Land Cruisers and Land Rovers that have like an elephant's trunk next to the driver's side, and that's supposed to help the car through swampy water to keep the engine aerated, I suppose, and to keep water out of the important parts. So it would almost isolate those parts of the engine that cannot get wet from the rest of it. What is the general expectation for something like that to be able to last in water that deep, like we've just seen in that picture?
So what happens when you enter the you don't necessarily need the snorkel, as they put it, intake is the thing that sucks the water in,
right?
Because it's sucking air in. So you don't need the snorkel, provided you are wading. You're pushing the water away from the car,
okay?
And then it creates this little vortex and vacuum inside the engine bay. But at some point, if the water gets deep enough, it will get into the engine bay, and most air intakes are at the top of the engine. At the top of the bonnet,
right.
So you're not, the water has to really rise into the bonnet of the car in order for the air intake to get in. And then there's electronics and all that stuff that could be damaged as well.
And of course, a lot of these cars are not built to be submarines, so the water is going to leak in through the dashboard or whatever else it is, even if it's a really well made car, because they're not meant to be underwater.
No, they're not, exactly.
Right.
So I would imagine. I mean, this was a random picture that nobody knows exactly where it is. I think it's Florida. And I would imagine that Corvette didn't wade for too long through that water.
Mm-mm. No, I like that. That's interesting, though, that if you lose momentum or you stop, then obviously the air intake is completely screwed. But if you keep moving, usually, if you're moving at the right speed and you're creating that pressure outwards, then you're usually okay. I didn't realize any of that. Cool.
So you just got to keep moving through the water, but don't go there in the first place. Have you ever waded, Ben, with a
rifle? No, I don't really want to either. People always go, you got to do these things. It's like, yeah, I guess, but then it just seems like a lot of work. But I just think that that's one of the most Florida pictures ever, because that guy was like, screw it, I'm going to do it. He's probably got a gator in his back seat as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Probably in the front seat.
Or a leather jacket from Gator Skin. No.
He's definitely got a leather jacket with something on the back.
All right.
And then lastly, Gareth, there is a research study that's going to start in the beginning of next year. A crowd called Go Metro is going to bring in a electric Toyota Quantum, mm-hmm. The taxi.
Yes,
and bring Toyota Quantum to Cape Town, and they're going to set up a charge station, and they're going to see whether taxi can be operated with an electric vehicle.
What's the bet that the taxi association will attack the poor guy who's got the electric taxi and like beat him up because he doesn't have to fill up with petrol? So I don't think this is a great idea. Unless everybody gets an electric taxi, no one should get an electric taxi. That's how the taxi associations think.
It's a good point. But some of the studies done so far, the taxi drivers themselves are very much for it.
Really?
Because I believe, you know, this is kind of hearsay, but I believe that the way the taxi drivers get remunerated is they have to pay a fixed amount to the taxi owner.
Yes.
And all other costs are off whatever they collect.
Well, as long as they disguise it to look like a normal taxi, you know, make it look like it takes petrol, then you should be all right. But the moment it looks different, it's going to get the same shit that Uber gets or that any of the other taxi services get. You know, the taxi drivers just do not tolerate competition. They don't think of it as a, you know, they don't want an equal playing field. They want special protection. And if they can't get it, then they'll just beat up those taxi drivers who don't do the same thing they do.
Well, I suppose that doesn't only go for minibus taxis. It's also the other taxi part of the industry, which, I mean, look at what happened with Uber, like you say.
Well,
you know, around the world, there seems to be this, you know, taxi anti-disruption.
The other problem, George, is, I hate to say it, but Eskom. You know, if you've got an electric taxi and you're relying on Eskom, you could be in a lot of trouble.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you've got a commute to do or a route to do and there's a two-hour – I agree with you. I mean, I've said up to now that load shedding does not impact owning and driving an electric car, and it doesn't because I live with one every day, because you can charge it overnight. But with a taxi driver, you might have to charge it during the day, which disrupts your route.
Yeah. Well, let's see what happens. I mean, you know, the more we can have options, the better. Of course, you and I and Ben, we're not talking like taxi drivers or taxi owners. So what do we know? All right, George, thank you very much. Have an excellent weekend. Ben, enjoy your weekend. Thanks, everybody.
Bye, guys.
See you on Monday. Yep, we'll see you on Monday at 6 o'clock George. In the morning. Cheers, everybody. Bye-bye.
Ciao. Bye. CliffCentral.com.